From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, October 21st, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work. Throw your shoulders back, stiffen that backbone, put a smile on your face, and keep a prayer on your lips. Everything should go okay, in theory. And practically speaking, yeah. All right, what do you say we get things officially started with?
The Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says, if someone says something unkind about you, you must live so that no one will believe it. One. I like that. But if you're looking for quick results, just get even.
I'm just relieved that I'm not as crazy as everyone says.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Let's do this.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
It's educational.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Oh, boy.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History. You might be quizzed.
I doubt that. Nobody's buying that anyhow. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1879, Thomas Edison applied for a patent for his design for an incandescent light bulb. And while he waited for the government to get moving on his patent request, he started work on getting electricity to the public. I think it finally dawned on him, wait a minute, people have to have electricity. And it was on this day in 1892... the opening ceremonies for the World's Columbian Exposition, or World's Fair, were held in Chicago. Though, because of construction and the fact that it was behind schedule, the exposition didn't open until May 1st of 1893. I guess the planners of the opening ceremonies were overly optimistic.
This is not good for my image.
This just in from our friends at the Babylon Bee, another news source I trust for humor. A large Venezuelan gang was completely wiped out this week after trying to take over a local Bucky's location. According to eyewitnesses, the gang, which was formerly based in Denver, had grown too confident after finding it incredibly easy to take over several apartment complexes. The violent criminals were soon put in their place when they marched on a Bucky's, guns blazing, only to find themselves greeted by a world-class force of polite employees, roasted nuts, savory pulled pork, delicious fudge, and heavily armed Texans. They never knew what hit them, recalled Sean Erickson, who had stopped at the Bucky's and saw the entire shootout. They rolled up and tried to start pushing people around and take control of the place. The lead guy barely got half his first sentence out of his mouth before somebody smoked him. I'm not sure what they expected. This isn't Denver. All of the customers and half of the employees were armed. Word of the incident had already spread throughout the migrant criminal community, leading to what experts expected to be a drop in crime, at least around any Bucky's location. These fellas better think twice, said Fred Alcott, a local cattle rancher who claimed to have taken down at least six gang members himself. Bucky's may have the cleanest restrooms and the widest selection of jerky in the world, but when you mess with the bull, you get the horns. Horns of hot lead. God bless America. At publishing time, all Bucky's locations had been declared safe zones for migrant crime. A new Atlas poll found Donald Trump leading Kamala by 3 points nationally, which kind of shocks me. I just can't believe that our nation, our voters in this country are so stupid. I mean, to me, this looks like this should be a landslide on the part of Donald Trump, but... Who was it? P.T. Barnum said nobody ever went broke, underestimating the stupidity of the American public, or something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing. He may not have used the word stupidity, maybe used the word naivete. But it just amazes me how many people in this country are ready, willing, and desiring to vote for Kamala Harris. But then again, this is a free country. This is the risk we run as being such a free country. We allow the opinions, and we should, allow the opinions of people who can't find their backsides with both hands and a GPS. That's just part of being a free country. But I thought you might like to know that he's leading by 3 points nationally. And here's the neat part. This poll also found Trump leading Kamala in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. And I kind of understand that. Georgia, I find a little strange because Georgia is a good southern state and Georgia is a powerful state. When it comes to the economy, Georgia has always been a powerful state. Got a lot of good things going for them, you know, in Georgia. But, you know, Pennsylvania, I understand it. Michigan, boy, do I understand it. Those people up there are sick and tired of being the heart of America's Rust Belt. Arizona is another one I don't understand. I thought Arizona would be more conservative. And Nevada, well, you know, in Nevada, anything goes. But Trump is leading in those five states. And that is pretty good. Now, Colin Rugg, who is, you see him on X a lot. He's kind of a conservative strategist. He went ahead and printed some numbers. This Atlas poll has Trump up by 3.3 points. That sounds redundant, doesn't it? 3.3 points. But he's up by 3.3 points over Harris in Pennsylvania, by 2.8 in Michigan, 1.4 in Georgia. And I don't have the Arizona figure, but that's all right. Anyhow, Breitbart reported that in Georgia, out of 1,411 likely voters surveyed, Trump received 49.5% of support, while Harris received 48.1%, representing just a 1.4% lead for Trump. But at this point in the game, we'll take any lead, right? In Michigan, out of 1,529 likely voters surveyed, Trump got 49.6% of support, while Harris received 46.8%. So that's a 2.8% lead for Trump. Trump got 48.4% of support among 1,171 likely voters surveyed in Nevada, while Harris got 48.1. So that's just a third of a percent lead for Trump. In Pennsylvania, among 2,048 likely voters surveyed, that's a good size sampling there, Trump got 49.8% of support, while Harris received 46.5%. And this represented a 3.3% lead, good lead. And the swing state poll found that Harris held a lead in North Carolina, getting 49.5% of support among 1,674 likely voters surveyed, which I find so hard to believe, because North Carolina right now is getting screwed, blued, and tattooed by FEMA under this administration, the current administration, which these days is being represented, of course, by Kamala Harris. She's the de facto president right now. And North Carolinians are suffering in the wake of Hurricane Helene. And yet they're still favoring Kamala? What in the bloody hell is going on in this world? So for North Carolina, she holds a 0.7% lead. She also led in Wisconsin, but then they're a bunch of cheeseheads. Back on Friday, Donald Trump earned a terrific endorsement. I think it's an important endorsement. You be the judge. But it came from an iconic men's culture magazine. And he's continuing this close to the election. He's continuing to build momentum, important momentum. This is coming on quickly. Of course, he's got one big thing in his favor that previous presidential candidates didn't necessarily have. And that is, he has an opponent who's shooting herself in the foot on a daily basis. But the magazine, Maxim, known for being a staple in American pop culture with content that ranges from entertainment and sports to fashion and lifestyle, most of which is aimed at men. And they posted on the X platform, Maxim endorses Donald J. Trump for president. And I love the photo that accompanied the post. It included a photo of a younger Donald Trump sitting in what appears to be an expensive car. Tried to make out which one it was. It looks like a Ferrari, which, of course, you know, Donald Trump could probably afford five or six of those in addition to a couple of planes. You name it. The man is rich, and he made himself rich by being exceptional. That's all there is to it. Exceptionalism paid off in his case. And then seated on the car is none other than his devastatingly beautiful wife, Melania. And she's looking at him very seductively. I mean, I don't know if it was Photoshopped, but it was a good photo. Very good photo. Made a great impression. Okay, so what about Maxim? Maxim was founded in the UK back in 1995 and has since expanded globally considerably, including a prominent edition here in the United States. The magazine covers a variety of topics aimed at a male audience, as I just mentioned. And yeah, it includes stuff like fashion, sports, cars, of course, gadgets, fitness. And did I mention entertainment? And it's most famous for its features on models and celebrities and its annual Hot 100 list, which showcases popular and attractive women in pop culture. Meanwhile, Trump has gained a narrow lead over Harris nationally. As I mentioned in the earlier story, he's also up in five swing states, but he's also ahead with pollster Nate Silver's prediction model. And this is all good this close to Election Day. Now, although the race remains essentially a toss-up, really, when you talk to the experts, Trump is leading Harris by just over a half a percentage point, with 50.2% to Harris's 49.5%, according to the model that was updated last Thursday afternoon. But then again, this depends on which poll you are looking at and which model you're looking at. Now, Nate Silver wrote on his Silver Bulletin site, he says, however nominal, it's Trump's first lead in our model since September 19th. Now, Silver noted that just a day earlier, Harris was leading Trump by about a point, with 50.3% to 49.4%. But Trump gained ground with some good polls entering the database on Thursday. And Silver mentioned that a 2-point lead in a Fox News poll and a lead in a Georgia survey surfaced. And Harris took the lead in Silver's polling aggregation model nearly a month ago. But neither candidate gained nor lost significant ground after the earlier presidential debate on September 10th. But Harris was performing strongly in five swing states, giving her an advantage. But that advantage has evaporated. So, again, Nate Silver, he's not the quintessential word in polling, but he's pretty good. And he said there's a good chance that the lead will continue to shift back and forth, akin to a 110-109 basketball game late in the fourth quarter. Good analogy. Now, Harris was riding high on a momentum just a few months ago after receiving Biden's endorsement when he exited the race. She gained some traction over Trump nationally and in swing states. But that said, recent polling, particularly the Atlas poll that we were talking about a few minutes ago, shows Trump in the lead nationally and in those five swing states. But again, Nate Silver makes a good point. This close to the election, the lead is going to ping pong back and forth, or certainly could. But that depends a lot on how Kamala Harris performs. And the sweet fact of the matter is, Kamala hasn't been performing. She's been shooting herself in the foot repeatedly. Now, according to the Hill Decision Desk, that's the publication, The Hill, their Decision Desk Headquarters Polling Index, Harris currently holds a 2.7 percentage point lead over Trump with 49.8% support compared to Trump's 47.1%. See what I mean? So again, it depends on which poll you are looking at. Earlier this month, the Sentinel Action Fund, which is a conservative super PAC, released an ad highlighting how Harris is always a radical, despite her recent attempts to represent herself as a moderate. The digital ad targets over 1 million low-propensity voters across Pennsylvania. And it also seeks to remind voters that though Harris has recently portrayed herself as a moderate, she's claimed that her values haven't changed. Boom, shot herself in the foot again with that one. And the ad closes with this line. Kamala Harris, once a radical, always a radical. Jessica Anderson, president of the Sentinel Action Fund, said that Harris and Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, Democrat of Pennsylvania, have not been open with voters regarding their radical opinions. She says, Kamala Harris and Bob Casey are being dishonest with Pennsylvania voters about their radical stances on everything. Everything from fracking to the border crisis. And this ad only shows a small snapshot of the various lies they have told voters. Out of all the stories that hit the fan over the weekend, I find this one probably the most interesting, and that is that a Democratic Muslim mayor of Hamtramck, Michigan, has endorsed President Trump. Now, Hamtramck is an industrial town. It's right on the northern edge of Detroit, and gee whiz, it's had its ups and downs over the years, believe me, as the auto industry has had its ups and downs. They built transmissions there for General Motors products, engines. Oh, gosh. I would imagine over its history, the town of Hamtramck has built just about every conceivable component for cars and trucks. And when the auto industry is down, the entire city of Hamtramck is down. And it is currently the only Muslim-majority city in the United States. Here's how the Times of India documented it. They said, former President Donald Trump was honored during his visit to Hamtramck, Michigan on Friday when the city's mayor, Amir Ghalib, presented him with a certificate of appreciation. The gesture came after Ghalib, the city's first Muslim mayor, endorsed Trump, marking a notable moment in the former president's campaign to court Michigan's Arab American voters ahead of the 2024 election. Ghalib, who was born in Yemen and became Hamtramck's mayor in 2021, praised Trump during the brief ceremony, calling the visit historic for the Muslim-majority city. We had a history of disconnect and miscommunication with the Republican Party. Now we are here to end that disconnect, Ghalib stated, adding that Trump's visit demonstrated respect and appreciation for our community. You see, just that one gesture, a gesture of respect, means the world to a guy like Mr. Ghalib. And then the Times went on to say, Trump, grateful for the endorsement, promised to bring peace to the Middle East, a key concern for many Arab American voters. We all ultimately want one thing, peace in the Middle East, and we're going to get peace, Trump said, speaking at a campaign office in Hamtramck where signs reading, Peace Through Strength, were on display. And that was pretty much the article. It was interesting, though, to see the enthusiasm of the people in the little video clip that was that accompanied the article. And the people there were really, really high on the fact that Donald Trump took the time and the effort to actually physically be there with them and to physically campaign. And this is where Kamala Harris is spitting in her mess kit. She's not showing up. And, you know, they always say the key to success is first in showing up. Be there. And she's not showing up. Because she knows, I think she has to know what an embarrassment she is every time she shows up somewhere. She runs her mouth, spewing out another buffet of word salad, and she appears to be so inept, she's certainly not furthering her cause. In fact, that's the best thing you and I could hope for and pray for is that she starts showing up in more places. Be there. Talk to the people. Continue to spew word salad. And that only helps our side. But I don't think that I can overstate the importance of Donald Trump having been there Friday in Hamtramck, Michigan, among a majority Muslim community and a city that not only is the mayor Muslim, the entire city council is Muslim. And the city, given all the all the things that the city has running against it right now, number one being an unstable automotive industry, and the automotive industry is unstable. Why? Because of the economy, because of energy prices, because of how the economy, the world economy, is stacked against the United States. And it's not because of foreign nations. They're not doing it to us. We're doing it to us. And nobody knows that better than Donald Trump. I think the greatest enemy, the greatest single enemy the United States of America has right now is not a foreign power. It's our mainstream media. It never ceases to amaze me that the issue of abortion seems to be a priority way over and above the drug problem that we have here in this country. Why is that? Well, I thought you might like to know that the Los Angeles Police Department seized enough fentanyl. We all know how deadly fentanyl is. But they seized enough fentanyl to potentially kill 11 million people. This went down in a major drug bust, highlighting LA's growing opioid crisis. Now, LAPD were able to seize over 50 pounds of powdered fentanyl, including black tar heroin, and all of this was in South LA. The estimated value of the confiscated drugs was well over $4 million, with fentanyl overdose deaths rising every year. And then you've got this pinhead governor of theirs, Governor Gavin Newsom, who now plans to combat these numbers. He should have been on this case years ago. But then again, he is Gavin Newsom. Now, actually, this seizure was important. It was very important. It's a significant blow to the illicit drug trade in general, at least for the moment. Okay? I mean, it's like trying to cut off the head of the Hydra. You cut off one, two more grow in its place. But the LAPD has conducted a major narcotics sweep, and it resulted in this seizure of over 50 pounds of powdered fentanyl, 9 pounds of black tar heroin, and it took place near downtown LA, and it led to the arrest of 28-year-old Jose Alberto Soto on suspicion of selling fentanyl. Now, this haul was substantial, with an estimated street value exceeding $4 million we just mentioned, and underscores the severity of the opioid crisis, gripping not just Los Angeles, but gripping the country, really. The LAPD's operation, which was considered to be a huge success, was part of a broader narcotics investigation that culminated in the execution of a search warrant in the Florence Graham neighborhood of South LA. Now, in addition to the drugs, investigators also seized $14,500 in cash. And the department, using figures from the DEA, estimates that the amount of fentanyl confiscated could potentially kill more than 11 million people, thereby highlighting the extreme danger that this synthetic opioid poses to public health. So, the LAPD's recent success is part of a larger statewide effort to combat the fentanyl epidemic. California's seen a dramatic increase in fentanyl seizures, with a record 62,224 pounds confiscated in just 2023. That's a staggering 1,066% increase since 2021. Did you catch that number? 1,066%. Percent increase. Now, this amount is enough to potentially kill the global population nearly twice over, which illustrates the scale of the crisis facing law enforcement and public health officials and the public in general. So, Governor Newsom issued a statement where he said, "Fentanyl is a poison. It does not belong in our communities. California is cracking down, increasing seizures, expanding access to substance abuse treatment, and holding drug traffickers accountable to combat the immeasurable harm opioids have caused our communities." So I guess we need to give credit where credit is due. Newsom has taken what is viewed as decisive action to address the crisis, increasing the number of California National Guard service members at U.S. ports of entry, increased them by approximately 50% to combat drug smuggling or smug-druggling. The state has invested $30 million to expand the California National Guard's drug interdiction efforts and over $1 billion since 2019 to address opioid trafficking, overdoses, and support for those with opioid use disorders. I mean, you have to attack a problem like this from all angles. Yes, you attack the trafficking. You lock up the traffickers. But you also have to understand that there's a supply and demand feature to this. There would be no huge supply for these drugs if there wasn't a huge demand. And the problem is, we as a culture demand the drugs. And so you have the drug cartel south of the border, all too happy to supply the drugs. Now, we hear so much about fentanyl. What is it? What is fentanyl? Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid, and it's a lot stronger than heroin, a lot stronger than morphine. It has legitimate medical uses, yes, but it's become a scourge due to its widespread illicit use. Now, the CDC reports that nearly 75,000 people died from fentanyl overdoses just last year, with over 150 daily deaths attributed to synthetic opioid overdoses. And these alarming stats underscore the critical importance of law enforcement efforts like the LAPD's recent bust in stemming the tide of this epidemic. And it is an epidemic. So Major General Matthew Beavers, he's the Adjutant General of the California National Guard, he said, "The California National Guard is committed to combating the scourge of fentanyl. These extraordinary seizure statistics are a direct reflection of the tireless efforts of the highly trained Cal Guard service members supporting law enforcement agencies statewide." So as part of the state's comprehensive approach to tackling the fentanyl crisis, and it is a crisis in every way, shape, and form, Governor Newsom has implemented a master plan that includes a $30 million California drug effort to develop and distribute naloxone nasal product. Now, this is considered to be a life-saving medication. And what it does is I don't want to say positively that it reverses. Let's say it can reverse the effects of opioid overdoses. And it provides a pretty important tool in the fight against the epidemic. And the LAPD's recent success, combined with the broader state initiatives, kind of represents a significant step forward in protecting public health and safety from the ravages of fentanyl and other dangerous opioids. And when it comes to the demand of these drugs, let's not forget the number one industry in the Los Angeles area. And those people do these drugs recreationally on a nearly daily basis. How about a quick trip over to the Comedy Corner with Brian Bates?
So I live in Nashville, and we have a hockey team in Nashville called the Nashville Predators. And if you wear a Predator shirt in Nashville, people knows what that means. In other cities, not so much. Me and my buddies went to Chicago. We went to the zoo, and I wore a shirt that said, "Proud to be a Predator." It looked like a judge made me wear that shirt. Like that was my sentence. I didn't have to wear an ankle monitor, but leave the state of Tennessee, you gotta show people what you did. I'm just walking around with this thing, no idea. There's a guy there with his wife and kids, and he was like, "Hey man, are you a Predator?" He was wearing a Chicago Blackhawks hat, so I thought he was just talking trash. I was like, "Heck yeah, I'm a Predator. I've been one all my life. I'm a Predator." My dad's a predator. My uncle was on the news. That's how big a predator he is.
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.